Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. He is Lance Meadow. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you want to participate in the program that way. And Lance, the Giants coming off a disappointing loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. They took the team that has the best record at the very least in the NFC, I know Carson Wentz, down to the wire. They lost 34-29. And, you know, we always talk about complementary football, and at different times this year, different facets of this team have failed from week to week. You know, a lot of times it's the offense not scoring enough points. The defense had games earlier in the year where they didn't get stops at the end of games, which could have gotten the Giants some victories. And here or there, it's been the special teams as well. Some punts out of bounds, some missed field goals. And it was really special teams in this game, to me, that was the backbreaker. Three block kicks in this game, a punt, which gave the Eagles the ball deep in Giants territory, an extra point, and a field goal, which took 4 points off of the board. And I believe Trey Wingo had this, he tweeted earlier today, first time in NFL history, or first time in 40 years or something like that, that a extra point, field goal, and punt were all blocked in the same game. And those plays, aside from the obvious math implications at the end of the game, you have to go for two because of the missed extra point and all that stuff, and then the field position on the punt, that to me, if you want to point the finger at something, that really cost the Giants this ball game.
Yeah, I thought that was a huge turning point, John, because when those things started to unravel, keep in mind, there was a 20-7 game in favor of the Giants. The Giants' offense was clicking. They scored touchdowns on their first three possessions for the first time since Week 12, 2014 against the Cowboys, the Odell Beckham catch game. So this offense was putting together arguably its best performance of the season when that had been an issue. So you figure, all right, the offense is doing what it can. The defense is making stops early. You know, this is a game where as long as the mental mistakes don't all of a sudden come back to bite you, you're going to be in a position to go down to the wire, which they were regardless of their mishaps. But 20-7 game, and all of a sudden in the blink of an eye, John, the momentum changes in this contest because Eli Manning was picked off. Great field position for the Eagles. They score a touchdown. Then all of a sudden you got the block punt. Great field position, and the Eagles score another touchdown. So all it took was two plays, two mishaps, and it's a completely different game, and the Eagles have the lead.
Yeah, and that was a throw I'm sure Eli would like to have back. I don't think it was the crispest route by Roger Lewis Jr. either, but Manning threw it into an area where there wasn't a whole lot of space to make it.
Ronald Darby had a good return, by the way, too, on that.
He did, and he broke like three or four tackles on that return.
37-yard return.
Absolutely. So if you want to point some fingers at the quarterback for that decision, that's absolutely warranted. I don't think Eli would disagree with you. But you're right. The momentum was really in the Giants' favor, Lance. Not only were they up 20-7, they had stopped the Eagles on a 4th-and-1 at the Giants' 44-yard line, which gave the Giants the ball right near midfield. And then on a 3rd-and-10, that's when the interception happened. And then the return gave the Eagles the ball on the Giants' 20. That's when Zach Ertz scored the touchdown. And then in the Giants' ensuing possession, they brought the ball down the field a little bit. And then that's when everything kind of went wrong. Here it is. They put three and out.
29.
Eli got sacked. Yeah. I was looking at the following possession. Eli got sacked. And then on a 3rd-and-4, Eli, I believe he got pressured on the play, and he kind of threw it away to Wing Goldman short. And then Brad Wing had his punt blocked, and it looked like, again, we're not in the film room, but from our layman perspective, it looks like Darian Thompson, the personal protector, did not pick up the guy coming up the middle of the field. And then that turned into basically two Eagles touchdowns on short fields, like you mentioned. And then all of a sudden at halftime, an Aldrick Rosas field goal gave the Giants back the lead. But instead of 20-7, which was the score with 4:50 to go or 5 minutes to play in the second quarter, it turned out to be a 23-21 lead. And then I think the Giants offense probably ran out of gas a little bit in the second half. They had almost 300 yards of offense at halftime, 299. So they only gained about 200 in the second half, which still actually is pretty good. But the Giants' defense, I think, in this game, you know, they struggled getting stops in the second half. And then, again, the block kicks taking points off the board really, you know, made the difference.
Well, as far as the defense is concerned, I didn't think the Eagles thrived on a number of explosive plays like we've seen previous offenses do. So I thought the Giants did a decent job there. You had, what, one run for over 20 yards, which was from Jay Ajayi. Other than that, you know, everything was within that 20-yard gain. So that wasn't a killer. What was a killer, though, was missed tackles. When you have the Eagles in a situation that they're facing a 3rd-and-8, and they dump the ball off to Zach Ertz, and he bumps off a one defender and then somehow gets the first
Darian
down.
Thompson.
that's a situation where you make the stop, changes field position, who knows how the dynamics of the game play out.
Yeah, Eagles had just two plays over 20 yards, and both, believe it or not, were by Jay Ajayi. One was on a run, the other was
on
a pass.
A short pass.
Correct, on a screen pass and a run, which is amazing. Alshon Jeffrey to catch for 19, one from 17 for Ertz, one of 16 for Aguilar, and one run by Barner for 18. So you got a couple plays that approach 20, but you're right, they really did prevent those longer throws, and I thought they had better pressure on Nick Foles than you had on quarterbacks in a while. Wasn't enough, obviously. Foles was still 24-38 for 237 and four touchdowns. A good game for him. But, I mean, the offense really put things together. And guys, I hate to be positive here off of a loss because you never want to be positive off a loss. There's no moral victories here in the National Football League. I agree 100%. But this team really came out and fought and played their butts off, and I thought played a pretty good game against a good football team, stayed with it, if not for a few of those crucial mistakes like we mentioned earlier. They really had a chance to beat the Eagles here, and they could have beat the Eagles twice this year.
Yeah.
A team that is probably going to finish with the best record in the conference.
Yeah, two games decided by a total of 8 points against the top team in the NFC. So, I mean, it certainly says a lot about the fight that you just mentioned, John. And I don't think it's stretching trying to take a positive away from another loss. Let's face it, the Giants put up 500 total yards of offense. They put 29 points on the board. I mean, you need to take the last few games combined to get that type of production. So, I mean, it does say a lot in terms of what they were able to accomplish. And here's the other thing. While the Eagles' defense, I wouldn't say that they're a dominant unit. I would not use that term. But the Eagles' defense has been one of the consistent units in the NFL this year, John, especially getting to the quarterback. Eli Manning was only sacked once, and it came on a two-point conversion.
And
so,
look, the Giants did get rid of the ball quick. And
they did.
And they
but you know what? Listen,
that.
You got to do that for most opponents in the NFL anyway.
Absolutely.
And there were even times where the Giants were trying to get rid of the football quickly, and they still had breakdowns, and they were taking sacks. So, I mean, I did see a number of strides that I thought were made. But, you know, like anything else, is this a flash and they just had a good Sunday, or are we going to see maybe some more of this in the last two games? I don't know if I'm going to go that far at this point.
And I like the game plan. I mentioned this to you on the post-game show last night on WFAN. I thought Mike Sullivan game planned the first part of this game very well. Taking advantage of the Eagles, bringing a lot of guys up to the line of scrimmage. Those passing lanes on the slants were open. The Eagles adjusted later on in the game and closed those off. And then the Giants, I think, you know, had to adjust back to them. But I thought to come out of the gate there with all those slant routes that were open, thrown well, run well, those got those early points on the board. I think Mike Sullivan did a good job game planning against Philly's defense.
Well, Manning was able to feed Sterling Shepard and Evan Engram consistently during the game. They both made plays. I mean, the numbers show that. Engram had 8 receptions. Shepard had 11, right?
246 yards on 19 catches for those two guys. And
so
one touchdown. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And that's what you expect out of your top two weapons that currently are still standing on this roster. I mean, the only thing that you could say with respect to the offense, John, is you wanted to see a little bit more run production, and that's fallen off over the last few weeks.
But Eagles do have the number one rush defense in football. And the Giants did average 3.3 yards per carry. I know that's not what you're looking for. Gallman, I thought, was okay. He was 8 for 39. Darker
but he had 6 catches, Gallman.
9 for 7, and Gallman had 6 catches. So
I thought he was much more productive as a receiver.
And I think Gallman is kind of showing you that all-around game that we talked about with him coming out, where he's kind of a, you know, jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none type of guy. And I think he's showing that he does have the ability to be a every-down back. He threw a key block on a pass protection play to get that one touchdown to Tavares King. He threw a good block down the field on the Shepard long touchdown run.
So did Red Ellison on the pick play to get Shepard open as well.
Yeah, and it's funny, when we actually just did that play for Inside the Film Room with Banks and Poppy. You'll see that on Giants.com later. On that play, Malcolm Jenkins actually gives Ellison a little shove into the Eagles defender. So I understand why the officials didn't call that a pick, because Jenkins did actually do the outstretched arms and give Ellison a little bit of a nudge, which moved him into the Eagles defender, which is your, that wasn't a pick, even though we all know the play was designed to be a pick.
Exactly, yes. Well, those are the nuances of a play, and that's right. Hence why you guys broke that play down. And I think there were a lot of dynamics in that play away from the football, which you have to take into consideration as to why Shepard was getting open. You hit on an interesting point, John, and as a means of comparison with Gallman showing his versatility. If you remember, at this time last year, we were talking about Paul Perkins. And I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but...
And 2 years ago, we were talking about Rashad Jennings at the end
true.
Of the year,
no,
by the way.
Absolutely. And it just seems as if the narrative is, right, a running back gets opportunities late in the season, shows some flashes. Because what, remember Perkins picked up the blitz against Cleveland? the linebacker, I forget, I think it was Jamie Collins, the former Patriot. He picks up the blitz. He gives Eli Manning an opportunity to throw the ball down the field. And everybody's starting to see, all right, hey, he's growing up. They have confidence in him on a third down. He could pick things up in pass protection. I'm seeing similarities out of Goldman. But now the question is, when we talk about him next season, will he A, stay healthy? Because that was an issue for Perkins, remember. You can't excuse that. And B, will the improvement continue? Or, once again, is this just a flash?
Well, it's the old baseball thing. Never trust what you see in March, April, and September. You know, it can be fake. You know, do you trust what you see in December for a guy that, you know, hasn't played a ton going into the year and then they have play well at the end of the year? You know, teams maybe don't have all the tape on him yet, things like that. Though Goldman has been worked in more from week to week.
He has.
But yeah. I agree with you. You can't take too much out of a few games. I think he's shown enough where he can have a role next year. I'm not going to make – look, I was captain of the Paul Perkins train that went off the tracks and wound up in the ditch, okay? I was the engineer.
Well, listen, I'm with you, too.
I was tooting the horn. I thought he was going to be great this year.
I thought he was, too.
And, look, I like Wayne Gallman. I think he has ability, but I will not let myself – and I'm sorry, Wayne. I would really love to believe in you, and I do, but I can't – fool me once, shame on you. Fool me once, shame on me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be a little bit more cautious this year.
Well, the only thing, though, I will add about Perkins, and I think a number of us certainly thought that he was capable of getting a volume of carries to be a number one back. I mean, I think the injury certainly stunted his ability to even bounce back this season. Not that he was doing wonders with the numbers even before he got hurt, but remember, what happened is he gets hurt. Orleans Darkwood starts to emerge again. Goldman gets his opportunities. When Perkins comes back, they don't go to Perkins and they're like, Perkins, you know, now we're going to elevate you to number one again. It was Perkins. You got to slowly work your way back into the mix. And he was inactive yesterday.
Yeah, when he was healthy, he didn't earn more carries either, too.
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Well, I mean, and that was the biggest issue.
I don't have it in front of me. I'll bring up Paul Perkins' game log just because I guess it's a little bit of a side issue, but I think it's an interesting thing to talk about. And we'll talk about it in the offseason more as we kind of, you know, break down what the Giants are going to do next year. But, you know, Paul Perkins, Lance, you're right. He showed great elusiveness at the end of last year. He made a lot of plays. We showed a lot of those plays in the film. I looked at the tape. It wasn't fake. It was real. It was real. But he just didn't do it consistently this year, and that's something that Wayne Gallman's going to have to figure out. Go through his plays.
Well, I mean, here's Paul Perkins' game log, and really it's the first four games of the season, John. And now it's interesting to look back and realize he didn't even have one game this year where he had double-digit carries.
Yeah, but
well, you're right, because it wasn't
the carries
and
yards.
No, but you would think that maybe there'd be one game where he'd get 10. He had two games of 7 carries.
For 16 yards and then for 10 yards.
And then he had two games of 9 for 22 and 13. Now,
he never averaged more than 2.5 yards per carry in a game. I mean, that's bad. It's bad.
The numbers don't lie. I'm not going to disagree with you. But I want to bring up another point. Notice how Perkins did not have a lot of opportunities with DJ Fluker on the field as the guard.
And I was going to make that point, too.
You have to at least take that into consideration.
Those first four games was in the original iteration of that offensive line. Before Pugh moved to tackle, Fluker moved to guard, they moved Jerry over.
A lot of different things changing.
And that's when the offensive line started to kind of come together. And even, frankly, Brett Jones coming into the equation, too.
Also.
And you're right, he was never with that group together. And I also think the Giants altered a bit of their run design based on the type of runner. I think once Orleans Darko became the number one guy, they did more power stuff. And, you know, maybe Perkins wasn't being utilized. I don't know. Whatever the case might be, whether it was the offensive line, him, or whatever, he did not have the production we thought he was going to have the first four games of the year.
And the reason why I'm bringing up these other factors is it's not to make a laundry list of excuses for Paul Perkins. It's just to show you there's a lot that goes into having a successful running game.
Correct.
You have to have the line, the quarterback, the running game all click. And when you look back, and I said this time and time again, it's no coincidence Fluker comes in that Chargers game, and then the Giants have 152 yards rushing.
Did he start
over
that game,
6
Fluker?
Yards per carry? I'm pretty sure off of memory that that was his first game. Do you think, did he come in the previous week?
I'm thinking maybe did he come in halfway through the Chargers game because of an injury?
Let's
maybe
take a look at the log. You may be right. I thought
I'm not sure.
Came
I don't
around
remember.
Against his former team, coincidentally, but I'm going to bring up the log.
Yeah, but did he start that week? It all depends on when. I'm trying to think what the first injury was. The first injury was Bobby Hart at tackle, right? And then they had to move Pugh out the right tackle, which opened up the opportunity for Fluker. Does that sound right to you?
That does sound right to me in terms of them shuffling people around and then bringing him in. He has
usually the offensive line game logs can be a little
starts
bit dicey.
This season. It can be, but usually NFL.com is pretty reliable in terms
so
of when he got
his first
start. His first start was against Tampa Bay.
Tampa, so he did have a start
against
week. Tampa.
So the Chargers game, you're right, he did not start. He did play in that game, and then he resumed the starting job in Denver. So it was the previous week. So Tampa, let's see, against the Bucs, they had 91 yards, which was a season high at that point. They had 3.3 yards per carry. It wasn't overwhelming. Then the next week, 152 yards, and then from that point on, they had 148 down against the Seahawks, 46, 111, 114, 112. So during the course of a six-game stretch, five games over the century mark,
and the Bucks
with
all,
Fluker involved.
And the Bucks also have a very struggling defense, too. So that has something to do with it. Obviously, you have to look at the teams you play. The Chargers at that point, I think, had the worst rushing defense in football, if I recall at that point.
Yeah, they
time.
Were pretty low on the total.
The Broncos,
so were the Giants.
The Broncos,
mean, two teams.
On the other hand, had a great rushing defense, and the Giants ran it on them. I think the Broncos' rushing defense probably cratered after that a bit, given how their season was.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's interesting because the two teams, Kansas City has slightly regrouped, a nice win for them against the Chargers, but the two teams that the Giants have beaten, it's almost like they peaked early, and then
correct.
We saw their true colors as the season progressed.
Okay, we touched on the game. I want to say one more thing before we get to your calls, the 201-939-4513. I'm not going to go into the metrics of a catch in the rule, because we've been through it a million times, okay? If you want to call about it, we can. I am going to dedicate an off-season show.
Oh,
it'll be
goodness.
Me and Lance, and we're going to figure out what everyone wants to do with the catch rule. I'm not going to do that today. But I will say this. If you're a fan out there and you still don't understand the catch rule, it's because you're choosing not to understand the catch rule.
Well said.
I don't know how many times I've heard somebody say, I don't know what a catch is. Well, then you know what? You're not paying attention hard enough. We've had so many of these by now. You should understand that a player, if he's in the process of catching the ball and is going to the ground, and he is not running with the football in between the catch and going to the ground, he must maintain control throughout the process of the catch. It doesn't matter if it's on the sideline. It doesn't matter if it's on the goal line.
The middle
it doesn't
of the
matter if it's on the 50-yard line on the team's helmet at midfield. If you're going to the ground while you're making the catch, before you become a runner, you have to maintain control. And it doesn't matter that he has two hands on the ball when the ball broke the plane. Why? He does not technically have possession of the football yet. It is still technically a pass at that point. That's why it's not a touchdown. And I've said my piece.
Play is not complete. Clearly, just in case the audience is confused, you're referring
to...
Well, because you probably should have at least set up the play. I mean,
should've.
Making it sound like it was in the Giants-Eagles game yesterday.
Sorry, you're
it
right,
was
I should have.
The Steelers-Patriots game. At the end of the game, Steelers initially had a go-ahead touchdown ruled in their favor. Ben Roethlisberger over the middle to tight end Jesse James.
Yep.
Upon replay, it was overturned, and then two plays later, Big Ben was picked off, and the Patriots won the game by 3 points.
It was the Dez Bryant play all over again.
Absolutely.
It was the Calvin Johnson play all over again. It was the Sterling
Shepard play against the Eagles.
Against the
week
Eagles
three.
All
yep.
over again.
Exactly.
Go down the list. It's happened a bajillion times over the last couple of years. And then the NFL, just for the coup de grace in the Cowboy Raider game, had the other rule everyone hates, the touchback rule with the fumble going into the end zone. So
yep. And we've seen that a few times as well.
Correct.
So there's numerous instances, and I think the convenient excuse, John, and you said it extremely eloquently, is that people disagree with it or it goes against their team. So the convenient thing to say is, oh, I still don't understand what the rule is all about, or I don't like the rule, so the rule is wrong. Here it was applied correctly 100%.
Correct.
I don't think
and
there's
look,
any gray area on that play.
And if you're a fan and you want the standards on what's a catch to be brought down, I get it. It's fine. If you don't think the rule matches the eye test right now and you think that player, you're asking too much of the receiver, I understand that argument. That's fine. You can have that argument in the offseason. But I'll just say this, and we're not going to get into a whole thing about this. Don't just tell me you don't like the rule. Tell me a different way to do it where it does not come down to an individual referee deciding whether or not somebody's made a catch
or not.
Making
a judgment call type of thing.
There has to be a red line somewhere.
Got to be consistency.
And I don't see any other point in the process of a catch where you can draw that red line consistently except at the end. I don't see how else you can do it. Unless you're literally putting a timer on how long the ball is in the guy's hands, I don't see how you can do it. I think it's much more difficult than people make it out to be.
One thing I just want to add before you get to the phone calls, and I understand we don't want to go on a tangent, but I think the simplest way to understand how the NFL operates right now, and you touched on this, is runners and receivers operate under two different rules. And that's what I think a lot of people are confused about.
In terms of possession?
Exactly.
And also, by the way, in terms of defenseless players. It's the same type of correlation.
Different criteria.
Correct.
So when you see one play, because I had people, and I'm sure you got it on Twitter, well, why did this one count as a touchdown? And it's because the guy established himself as a runner,
correct,
so all he had to do was place the ball over the goal line. Completely different criteria.
Yeah, in order to have possession of the football, you have to turn yourself into a runner. There's no such thing as a football move anymore. People like to throw a football move out there. That's not in the rule book. That's gone. You have to turn yourself into a runner and no longer be a defenseless player. A good way to figure out, folks, whether or not a player has turned himself into a runner, if that player gets nailed by a defensive back or safety in head-to-head contact, if you think that's a defenseless player and it should be a penalty, guess what? That means the player hasn't turned himself into a runner yet and he has not established possession of the football.
Because he can't protect himself. Yeah.
Bingo. That's how you know when a guy's become a runner. It's when he's able to protect himself from a defensive player.
Well, and that's a great point, because if you look at that Jesse James play from every different angle, there is no way that he could have protected himself after diving for that ball.
If he would have caught that ball and he got speared from behind in the helmet by somebody else's helmet and dropped the football, that would have been a 15-yard penalty.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, because he had
absolutely
not completed the process of the catch and become a runner and was able to defend himself. That's a good way, I think, to look at it. Anyway, let's get to it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to line four first, McKenna. Chris in Syracuse. He'll lead us off. What's up, Chris?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Chris. What's going on?
You guys touched on a couple topics that I was thinking about, but it's nice to actually have a game worth talking about, because we've been talking about
absolutely
everything other than games lately.
We're with you.
But a couple things. One, I don't think that Perkins ever showed the viciousness in his running that what I've seen from Gallman. That would be one distinction that
now,
I would
Chris,
make.
Now, Chris, I agree. Gallman has much more power and is a much tougher between-the-tackles guy, no question about it.
And he did a lot of that at Clemson, too.
Correct.
So you have to take that
Perkins,
into consideration.
Perkins is more of a make-you-miss scat. Not, I wanted to call him a scat back, but he's more of an elusive guy that makes you miss. He's not going to put his shoulder down and gain extra
yards.
He's
not going to run people over.
Correct.
No. So I'm excited to see him moving forward. I do think he's one of the few bright spots. You guys are kind of talking about officiating, and I thought that yesterday's Giants-Eagles game was poorly officiated, and I'm not even going to get into the whole Ingram thing at the end of it, because that really has nothing to do with it. I actually thought that the Giants got away with probably about three false starts on that right side of the line.
Bobby Hart, right?
Yep.
I thought on that last drive, Bobby Hart might have jumped two or three times. I agree 100%.
A bunch of times. And also, the Eagles got away with, I don't know, about 50 delay of game penalties before they finally called the one where Vernon jumped.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't think it was biased towards one team or the other. But I just think in general, and I'm not really one to get too far into the officiating. In fact, I actually think the officiating's gotten a little better over the last couple of years, because it did seem like it was getting worse and worse and worse every year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I haven't really had a whole lot to say about it, but I just thought that it was just sloppily done yesterday. Maybe not necessarily impacting the outcome of the game or anything like that, but I just think that they should tighten up. And then one other thing I'd just like to say is that got to take into consideration that Eli Manning has had two viable, consistent receiving threats on the field just three times since we played the Chargers. You had Shep out there in San Francisco, and Eli threw a good game. You had Shep last week in Dallas, but the hamstring, I think, was a factor. And then again yesterday, and you see a good game. So, and before everybody went down, I really think that Eli was having a fantastic year. I was making the argument he might have been the best player that we had out on the field because Odell was hurt. And there's just a lot going on pre-snap and during things I just don't think he gets the credit for. He hasn't had much to work with. And now you get at least two starting caliber threats out on the field during these games, and you see that he's still delivering at a fairly high level. I thought the protection was good yesterday. And now, the only other thing I would say is I wonder how much of this is a result of the fact that Eagles were pressing yesterday, because back in week three they played soft, and that didn't work very well for them. So yesterday I think they were saying, oh, well, you know, they don't have a very high caliber receiver, so we're going to try to press them at the line. And I don't think that it was working very well from them. So it seems like most teams have been having the most success just kind of playing just straight up defense, not off, not pressing, just kind of playing.
Yeah, Chris. So, thanks for the call, Chris. We appreciate it. And I think you made some good points there. I think Eli, obviously, when he has his, you know, two major weapons that are left healthy, Ingram and Shepard, it makes a big difference. Eli did catch a break yesterday. That final drive could have really easily ended on the second play when he throws it right to Nigel Bradham and it goes hands.
Yeah.
And then earlier when, I believe, weren't they punting and then there was a offsides penalty that that extended the drive at some point?
Correct. Yeah, I think wasn't it a fourth and four or something like that? Yeah, that continued. Correct.
So they had a couple things that obviously helped them out a little bit. But Eli played probably his best game of the year overall, 37-57, three touchdowns, one pick. It could have been two. I think there was only a couple throws. He might have overthrown
Angry.
One receiver down the field a little bit. The one that went through the fingertips.
I think it was Evan Ingram.
Was it Ingram?
I believe so.
Okay.
Right near the end zone where it went. It was a high ball that was thrown towards
him.
Yeah,
and I thought there was another one. Yeah, you know, that was the one on the little slant where Eli airmailed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Then there was another one down the sideline. Was it maybe Roger Lewis or Shepard? He tried to catch it like this, and it went right by his fingertips, and he couldn't quite put his hands around.
Yeah,
I forget
which receiver
it was. Yeah, but those are the two that I remembered where he maybe made a couple errant throws besides the one pick and the one almost pick, obviously. But I thought he played a pretty good game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I certainly think there's a distinct difference, as the caller touched on, when you have weapons and guys that are consistently going to make plays. I mean, clearly the quarterback is going to benefit from that. But with that being said, you know, especially people who want to play the coulda, woulda, shoulda game, in the event that all of these guys didn't get banged up, you still need to account for games when the offense clicks, the defense or special teams not coming through, and them still not finding ways to win games. And that just goes to show you that even if the offense was fully healthy, I guess the point I'm making, John, throughout the season, and they were consistently putting up points, I don't want to automatically say that the two wins gets turned into nine wins and they're on the brink of making the playoffs. I don't think it's that simple, especially with the issues across the board on this team.
Joe in Pennsylvania next on line two. How are you, Joe? What's going on?
Hey, great to talk to you guys here. That was Shepard. He overthrew there.
Okay.
But, I don't want to go into the facts of the game. I want to get my points out before you cut me here. What I want to say is the specialty teams lost the game. It's a shame, you know, they let them bust through and block it.
We agree.
What I mean? It is a shame. But I want to give kudos to Apple. He played a good game. He showed he can play a good game. Tavares King. Do we have him wrapped up for next year?
I imagine he's probably just on a one-year deal, to be honest with you. I don't think he's on. Yeah, remember, they brought him back mid-season after they let him go because he was kind of dealing with that ankle injury. So
he'll, in all likelihood, be a free agent.
But don't worry. If they want him back, Joe, he'll be back.
They could, correct, bring him back.
Well, they better sign him because he showed it. Their number one defensive back, I forget, from the Eagles, he was burning him no matter what.
Darby?
And he has size in that.
Jalen Mills,
he showed it earlier. He's a big playmaker. I'll take him any day for the price. They better sign him and not let him go.
He's got good
speed. You have him out there with the tight end we have now, and you bring Beckham back and Shepard, Lewis, and that as just backups. You have your receivers. You have your specialty guys. Our offense, our defensive backfield will be all right. I don't think Shane Vereen's going to be there, but just bring in a veteran, or if they sign another young guy, you know. That's the way I'm looking at that there. What else did I want to say? What happened with that Shepard catch there? Even the receiver said it was the announcer said it was a catch, but then they came back and ruled on it and said it was no catch.
Trying to think of which play you're referring to, Joe. So much happened yesterday. I'm thinking of the Steelers-Patriots game.
He definitely had it in his hand. They reviewed it there.
Remember they showed the replay from behind, and he kind of fell over the football in the middle of the field, and the tip of the ball hit the ground.
Yes. No, now I know what you're talking about.
Even the announcer says it's definitely a catch and everything, but whatever. The Giants overcame that, but like I said, I don't want to go into the thing of the game. The specialty teams lost that one without a doubt. You know, without a doubt,
it was
that
huge in terms of field position. Yeah, listen,
you're
up 20-7
for the Eagles and everything. If not, I thought the Giants was going to rout them. What I want to get back to too with Eli, he proved everything again. He can do it. You know what I mean? But if I'm Mara or something, I said, these last couple of games, I would say, Eli, we love you. You're starting next year without a doubt. We got to play this backup of ours, these young guys here, the quarterback here, to bring them up and see what we got. Because even with that win yesterday over the Eagles, it's great and everything. And I hate the Eagles. That's my worst team. I want to beat them and knock them out. But we got to look for next year because it all means about next year and the draft. And we're going to have these same questions again. Can the Giants keep doing this here? Should we bring back Spags and the coordinator now that's calling it here? Because they look great. You know, if we can play this way against the Eagles, you know, and I agree with you, John. Like I said, if that top draft pick here is a quarterback and he's up there, we take him because you're up there that high. You take a quarterback if he's that good. That way we have two chances between that and Webb to be our quarterback.
Well, assuming everybody is on the same page, Joe, and that's exactly what we've been talking about previously.
I agree. And
that's
with him,
the key.
And if not, if they're both tremendous or so, we can always trade one. And all I want to see is the offense and defensive lines beefed up for next year and get linebackers because I think we have enough specialty teams. So thank you. Merry Christmas.
Hi,
Happy
Joe.
New Year.
You too, buddy. Cool. Good to hear from you as always, my friend. Kevin in Phoenix, line one. He's up next. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're here loud and clear. And, Kevin, we're going to be in your neck of the woods next week.
Yeah, that's actually why I'm calling. So, you know, it's not every day Giants come to town. So I was curious who's coming out and if you guys are out, you know, amongst the stadium or whatnot beforehand. If so, you know, I'd like to come down and meet you guys. Love the show. Listen in the off season, and like I said, it'd be great to come by and shake a hand.
Hey, well, you know what? It's tough on road games for me because I'm kind of in the press box most of the game, and Lance will be sequestered back at WFN in New York, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Secret Service is around me all the time, Kevin, so they don't allow me out of New York City for road games.
Well, Kevin,
so
do me a favor.
I unfortunately won't be able to shake your hand in person.
Kevin, do me a favor. Hit me up on Twitter, and maybe we can figure out a way to figure it out, all right?
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
You got it, Kevin.
That's it, huh? Wow.
Well, he wanted to weigh in, an opportunity to meet you in person. You know, not everybody has the esteemed pleasure that I get every day.
I hate to give somebody that big of a disappointment on Christmas
vicinity.
Eve. I mean, Christmas is supposed to be a joyous occasion,
you know?
Christmas Eve. It's like, oh, that schmelk.
Well, you're used to playing the role of Scrooge, so, you know, I mean, it's perfect for you.
More Grinch, I think.
More Grinch, right.
More Grinch.
Well, whatever your cup of tea is. So
I think you're a bit of a Grinch sometimes.
I never denied that I wouldn't take on that role, but I'm unfortunately not going to be in Phoenix to play that role in front of Kevin.
The problem I think you're more of a Scrooge because the Grinch is very like tall and lanky.
Well, of course. All right. So now we got to go with the physical description.
Scrooge is a little
bit so I don't
older
meet that.
And like tiny. So
there
think,
you go. Yeah, but
I think
old.
You're more of a Scrooge.
So I'm old now? Is that what you're calling me?
No, you're not old, but you're cheap like Scrooge is.
Whoa, wait a minute. These are really some big time accusations here. I didn't think I was going to have to defend myself to a T. Here, boy, wow! I don't have a comeback right now. I'll work on that.
Any time I could take a shot, you know.
I was
going to
say that was an unexpected shot. I don't know where I was.
That's pretty good.
Well, whether or not there's validity behind it,
happy Hanukkah.
Whether or not there's validity behind it is another thing.
Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis. He's up next. What's up, Abdul?
Wow, not pulling any punches today, are you?
I was going to say,
why not? Who
indeed.
Cares?
So what's happened, Abdul?
Hey guys, I haven't called in a while because I haven't had anything really good to say. It's one of those seasons, but I've been thinking about this the whole Giant way and getting the new GM and stuff and the new coach, and they're talking about, you know, the guy from Carolina maybe being the guy who's top of the list, and I really hope, you know, the Giants have a chance to do something really exciting and really change the dynamic of this team. And, you know, they tend to go boring, right? Like look at the stadium. They had $1 billion to make a statement stadium, and they built a big gray box. I mean, the Giants can't build a big gray box when it comes to GM. I want a GM who will, you know, trade down, trade up, just do something that's kind of out of the box. You know, get a coach that, you know, that attacks offenses and not just has this, you know, quick slant games and draw plays. I'm just sick and tired of the Giants being so damn boring. And I really hope, you know, and the people I want is the guy from the assistant from Baltimore. I think he'd be a great pick. And no one talked about this, but is Frank Reich available as a coach?
Well, he's the offensive coordinator of the Eagles, so he certainly would be available because it would be a step up if he were to become head coach. You can't go from OC to OC. That you can't do in the NFL. You can't go from DC to DC. But
no,
if a team wants to elevate you, you could be considered.
Head coaching candidate. Like, would you have seen him as a head coaching candidate, or you think he's Not enough experience yet. I love the way he calls the game.
He was mentioned for something, Abdul, a couple years ago. Was it as a head coaching candidate? Or
he was the Chargers offensive coordinator before he came to Philadelphia.
I thought I remember him being mentioned as a potential head coaching candidate a year or two ago. I don't quite remember it. I'll do a Google search, see if I can remember it, Abdul. But, yeah, I mean, look, he's a quarterback. You know, the general progression is quarterback's coach, the offensive coordinator, the head coach. So he's on the path. I agree. I also like the way he calls a game. I think he's pretty creative. I think he knows how to get the ball down the field, which I think is essential for any good, effective NFL offense. So I think he'd be somebody I could talk to, but I'd have to look at a deeper look at his experience and what he's done before I told you I think he's the right man for the job.
Well, I think similar to Doug Peterson, you know, he was a backup quarterback, so he can relate. You know, I almost make the comparison, and we'll let you continue, Abdul. I make the comparison in the NBA, John. Normally the role players or the slash point guards tend to make more effective coaches than the stars. Why? Because they can relate to everybody on the roster.
Yeah, because, you know, basically you have Larry Bird on the bench, like, you should be better than that.
Of course. I mean, can he relate to the 12th guy on the bench?
No. He can't.
So
exactly.
The backup quarterback, I think he's a guy that, you know, he wasn't handed everything. He had to earn it. He filled in. He prepared every single week. So I think that mindset helps relating to other players, which Frank Reich would meet that criteria. Real quickly, though, Abdul, before you continue your point, you threw out Baltimore Ravens assistant. I'm curious who you're referring to, though.
He's the assistant GM. He's been there forever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if people have tried to get him, his name is slipping me right now.
DaCosta? DaCosta, is that
Oh,
it?
You're talking about a general manager.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I thought you said an assistant coach on the staff. Okay, I misheard you.
Assistant GM.
I got gotcha. You. Okay, so you're talking about right under Ozzie Newsome. Okay, I got gotcha. You.
Right.
Eric DaCosta is his name.
Yeah.
Eric DaCosta.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think the way Baltimore, you know, they've always been so creative drafting. They always seem to come up with these players, you know, out of nowhere. You know, recently they've been, you know, every team has its ebbs and flows. But Baltimore always has a pretty good draft, it seems like. And this guy, I think he's the brain trust behind it. But would he leave Baltimore? Who knows? But, I was really, really disappointed when I heard this guy from Carolina, because he's basically an in-house guy. They won't change the I don't like calling people losing their jobs, because that's, you know, it affects a lot of people, but I think the scouts need to be – new blood has to put this building. And I really think the Giants have a chance to do it, and they seem to always do half measures, you know, and I'm sick of half measures.
Well, Abdul, I will say this. No matter who they bring in, you're not going to – I don't think you'll be able to let go of every scout. I mean, you're looking at filling 15 positions. I'm not sure there's 15 people available that are, you know – that qualified to take those spots. And quite frankly, you don't flush everyone out for the sake of – Abdul, let me finish. You don't flush everyone out for the sake of flushing everybody out. If you want to pick out guys on the staff, you're like, well, you know what? Maybe we think we want to get a better evaluator here or whatever. You can make those changes. But just because the end product wasn't good doesn't mean that there aren't very valuable people within that group that can help the next regime. You know what I mean?
I said, I don't like calling for people's jobs. But usually when – a big turnover happens with the GM coach. So you think scouts usually stay?
No, I'm not.
I think it varies from situation to situation.
No, Abdul, absolutely. Every scout's not going to still be here, but I doubt that every single one would be let go and replaced by a new person. Usually there will be some holdovers if the organization believes they have some really good young scouts or something like that.
That they want to
see
grow.
They will hold some of those people. But I agree, there's a better chance of there being more turnover if you bring in somebody that's not connected to the organization.
Doesn't have relationships with
those people. Then if you bring in somebody that is, I think you're exactly right about that.
And I'll give you an example, Abdul. Once again, I think it varies. I don't think every single new GM that comes in is going to follow the same exact rules. But here's an example of where they did clean house. The Buffalo Bills, if you remember, and this is what they did, which I thought was interesting. They waited to announce their new GM until after the draft. Why? Right. Because the previous scouting department was the one that went around and watched all these college kids. So you're not going to bring in a new scouting department before the draft. They waited until they drafted, and then after the draft, they brought in Brandon Bean, who is the assistant GM with the Carolina Panthers, who served under Dave Gettleman before he was let go. They had hired Sean McDermott, and then Brandon Bean came in, and then he made changes to the scouting department.
Yeah, and Abdul, by the way, even if they hire a GM, let's say they hire a GM on January 4th, they're going to have to treat it the same way the Bills did. You can't change it. You might be able to change a couple people at the top maybe in positions if you want, but the nuts and bolts of your operation, these people that built their reports already, you can't get new reports from new people.
You need them to advise you. They went out to the colleges.
You'll have a different final decision maker, which is what you want, but you would still use those people, and then if you want to make additional changes, those changes would be made theoretically after the draft.
That makes sense. Yep, I get that, because there's just time-wise you can't have a whole turnover.
Correct.
Start over again.
Lance is absolutely right.
And also, I think someone did mention this, but I watched the game yesterday. It's probably the first game I watched in totality in like 3 weeks. And Eli looked great. You know, I think he's put to bed if he has it. But we need to start that young kid. We need to start Webb, because having a high draft pick, if we think Webb is as good as Rosen or I think Rosen will be the guy who's there. We could, you know, if we don't need a quarterback, we could maybe get four picks in the first two rounds if we trade down. And you got to figure that out, because if you're not going to pick Rosen or one of the top two quarterbacks, it changes the complete dynamic of how you're going to draft. So you need to find out what we have with this kid Webb and go from there. Because that's
but
the
Abdul,
biggest question.
Here's the thing. You know, you're not going to find out everything you need to find out from Davis Webb from playing two games at the end of the season.
I know. They should have done it before, but they got to do something. They can't go in not knowing what it looks like on the line five.
I agree with that. Abdul, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We agree. Look, I don't think Lance disagrees. There's no harm from getting Davis Webb in the game and seeing what he can do. But much like we talked about the running backs a second ago, this is an even smaller sample size now. To make any definitive declarations about Davis Webb from what he does under these circumstances at the end of the season in limited snaps, I think would be a little foolhardy. I think you do what you do regardless, and then you sort it out later.
Yeah, he's not going to check off all the boxes, even if he dazzles in the final two games. You're still going to want to see more.
Or if he's terrible. Look, Jared Goff played an entire season as a rookie, and he looked like he didn't belong in college football, let alone NFL football. He was a train wreck. He's going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback this year from a different staff, a different system, in 1 year of offseason work. So you cannot judge a rookie quarterback off of two games. And look, Lance, if you draft a quarterback and Webb ends up being a player, guess what? You can figure out what to do with two good quarterbacks. You can either keep one as a backup.
Correct. You have some options.
Like
and
the
you
Patriots
have competition
did with Garoppolo,
too.
Or you end up training him like the Patriots did with Garoppolo, and you get something for him. And by the way, there's no guarantee either that if you trade the second pick, you're getting four picks for it. You need to have somebody that wants to come up and get that player. And by the way, and I'll say this again, if both Rosen and Darnold do not come out, guess what? There might not be one team looking to trade up to number two for a quarterback. There might not be a team that wants to do it. They might want to wait till five or six for either Allen or Mayfield or whatever they want to do. So there are a lot of different facets to this equation here where let's not decide what the Giants should do in the draft in December, because a million things can change between now and then.
Combine, you got so many different things, and the hype machine goes up and down. But
we don't even know who's coming out yet.
Correct. So, you know, it's all speculation. But I wanted to piggyback off of the point you just brought up. I'm glad you brought up Jared Goff, because I was going to go to him where if you would have watched him last season, you would have cringed. You would have said, boy, Rams made a bad choice. Carson Wentz should have been the guy that they should have went with. But what Jared Goff also serves as an example, John, is the system you put the quarterback in, the coaches that you have with the quarterback is another big factor.
And the players around
in his evaluation.
How much are the Rams receivers this year?
Absolutely. So, listen, it's nothing in terms of reflecting on the current Giants coaching staff, but let's say the Giants do go in a different direction in terms of assistance and so forth. You'd be evaluating Davis Webb operating this current offense, John.
Correct.
Next season, if a new coach comes in with an entirely new offensive philosophy,
which is likely, to be honest,
then you're going to have to completely reevaluate Davis Webb, because now he's going to be running an entirely new system. So how much more stock can you put in these final two games? Now, that doesn't mean there's not a benefit to play him. The point is the dynamics are going to change so much potentially.
Correct.
That I don't know how much you're going to look back and say, wow, we could really take a lot away from these two games.
Here's what you take out of it. You take out of it how quickly does the game move for him? Can he slow it down in his head? Does it look like things are moving too fast? How does he do on pre-snap reads and pre-snap adjustments, reading the blitz? How does he react to pressure? Does he stay in there and step into a throw with a guy in his face, or does he, you know, do that?
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see.
How does he command the huddle? All
yeah,
these types
all
of things.
Those things. Yeah. That it doesn't matter what offense you're in, if you're a quarterback, either have it or you don't. And those are the things that you can see that are important. Let's go to line one. And we haven't heard from Shakes in a while. No, Shakes said he was having trouble getting through, but I guess he did today. Hi, Shakes.
What's going on, John?
Long time no speak, brother. How are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. But it must have been a long time since I called in, because the people that take the calls don't even know who I am anymore.
There you go, see? You got to restore your reputation, Shakes.
I see. Shades. Did you say Shades? Hey, man. It's me.
It's been a while, man.
Yes, it has been.
What do you got?
Man, listen, it's been a rough season.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
been a rough season, but I got basically what I wanted. And it's going to be new people calling shots in that office.
Yes, sir.
As far as we and McAdoo, and I've been calling for that for a while. Even when Coughlin was here, I was calling for it. So my GM that I really want is Pioli. I want Scott Pioli. I feel like Scott Pioli is responsible for that whole mantra of the New England Patriot way. I feel like it's him and Belichick, like, if they had a kid, the Patriots is their son.
I agree. I think he has a hand in that. I would caution to give more credit to Pioli, or even as much to Pioli as it did to Belichick. But what I like about Pioli as a candidate is that if you look at his drafts in Kansas City, it was his drafts that kind of built what the Chiefs became after he left. And since he's gotten to Atlanta, you've seen how they've rebuilt their offensive line and also rebuilt their defense in the draft. I think they've done a very good job with that as well.
Yeah, but I like DaCosta too. Somebody brought him up earlier. I like DaCosta too.
Well, I mean, honestly, Shakes, he's been a hot candidate for a while. A couple of teams, I think, have even offered him the job, and he has decided to stay in Baltimore instead. So they'll have to figure out if he even wants to leave there or not.
Yeah, especially since, you know, they have a well-oiled machine there. Yep. And, you know, here's the other thing, and I'm just speculating. If Ozzie Newsom's getting up there, did they maybe promise him that when Newsom's ready to retire, it's yours?
Question.
And he may say, you know what, I'm comfortable. They've given me an indication that that's going to happen. I'm not going to leave.
Yeah, he's the heir apparent.
Yeah.
He's the heir apparent. And, but the New York Giants job is an interesting job. So if it's any job that can lure somebody out, maybe it's that one.
I agree.
Now, the thing about it is, I know y'all say the draft is a far, far away, and it is. But of course, let me just say this off the rip. I want Saquon Barkley. Okay, it's Team Barkley all day.
Shocking. Shocking that you want the running back in the first round, Shakes. Yeah. I don't believe that for a second.
Come on. Get the special player.
He loves
y'all know
backs.
How I am.
You love your playmaking player. Running backs. I know you do. I know.
So, I want him. But the thing about it is, I'm not opposed to getting a quarterback for the future. I just don't want to do it pressingly, like going into the top 10 and saying, oh, we got to have this quarterback and we got to do a first round. Like, I don't even want that. With this second overall pick, like even the second round is very valuable that you could hop back in the first round with that pick.
You can, but you'll have to trade a pick from the following season to do that, probably. Depending on how, if you want to trade up to get one of these quarterbacks to move into like the 15 area, you're going to have to trade a one or two from next year to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all based on the point system, remember?
Yeah.
So you'd have to look at the
chart.
I know it's the
point system, but I'm saying like more like, you know, maybe in the top 20, like you get back in the 20s, and it's a quarterback, because I'm hearing that it's about four or five of them that could be franchise quarterbacks in the future. And with doing that and waiting for, you know, the 20-something, let's just say 23rd overall, trade back up and you grab one of those quarterbacks, with having Eli and my boy throwing for 400, yeah, OG, how ball is that? But my boy throwing for 400, it gives us a little leeway to do something like that and just have that quarterback learn for a year or two under Eli. That's my notion. I want Eli to stay, and I want the GM to value franchise and Hall of Fame veteran quarterbacks. I don't want a new GM to just be like, okay, I want to just go with the new guy. I want to ease it on along. But that's what I wanted to say about that, all that. But I appreciate y'all taking my call, y'all.
All right, Jake.
It's good to talk to y'all.
Appreciate the call.
Don't be a stranger, man.
And that's,
all right, I won't.
Thank you,
I won't.
Buddy. Appreciate it.
And that's a very important conversation that's going to happen with the new GM, and then ultimately whoever the new GM brings in is the new head coach.
And so with ownership.
Correct. What direction they all want to go in. Meaning, do they want to start fresh? Does the new coach say, you know what, let's develop the young quarterback from the start so that we get a year ahead of the situation? Or do we feel that the team is still competitive where Eli can run what we want to do and then the young quarterback can be groomed simultaneously?
Hey, look, and Eli said yesterday, as definitively as I've heard him say it, so since the whole, you know, thing with Geno Smith, that he wants to be back.
He said that on multiple occasions.
Yeah, you know, he said, you know, I like it here, and then I'll make the decision after the year. And he was.
Oh, you're talking about he wants to be back. I thought you meant about playing in 18. I'm sorry.
No.
Okay.
He made it clear previously. He's made it clear that he's wanted to play always. Absolutely. In the past, though, he was always like, you know, after the season, I'll decide what my future is. Blah blah blah. But the quotes that I saw in the paper today from after the game. You know, because he got asked, I think it was John Mara said that he wants him back for sure next year. And Eli says, well, I want to be back. I love being a Giant. So that was kind of as definitive as I've seen him answer that question so far. But in the end, it'll have to be a decision from the new GM and the new coach. And I'm not going to get into, you know, trading into the top 20. You know, just really quickly, Shakes, if you want to look at the point system, you're looking at going from, you got to make up about 350 points, depending on where you want to go. So that would be a second-round pick in that situation. And I'm not even sure. You might have four quarterbacks in the top 15. Would you be shocked if, assuming both Darnold and Rosen come out, that Darnold, Rosen, Mayfield, and Allen all go in the top 15 in the draft? It wouldn't surprise me right now.
No, it wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, a lot has to do with the teams right now and where they want to go.
And what needs they have.
I mean, for example, you know, a few weeks ago, before the Jimmy Garoppolo trade, John, I would have said maybe San Francisco's mindset is go all in for Kirk Cousins, and if Washington retains him, then we start thinking about the draft again. Now that they have Garoppolo, he's a free agent, of course. They got to re-sign him. You know, you're taking the Niners out of the equation.
And that's the thing. You're right. And remember, free agency happens before the draft. And this is one of the more active free agency periods with quarterbacks than we've had for a long time. There are a number of impact quarterbacks that will be free agents. By the way, don't forget Drew Brees. Drew Brees is a free agent too. Now, there's no indication he wants to leave New Orleans, but never say never. So, you know, you got him, you got Garoppolo, you mentioned.
Denver, what are the Broncos
course,
do?
Cousins, what are the Broncos
Cardinals,
do?
Carson Palmer.
How about the Jaguars?
Jaguars is another one, correct.
Do they want Bortles. Well, Bortles has played better the
he
last
has
few
played
weeks.
Very well, yeah.
But do they want to stick with him? You mentioned Arizona. You can go, you know, go down the list
well,
of teams.
Here's another one. Kansas City, do they give it to Patrick Mahomes and let Alex Smith walk? And then does Alex Smith create a domino effect by going elsewhere?
How about the Minnesota Vikings?
Teddy Bridgewater.
And Bradford. And Keenum. Three guys there that they have to make a decision on.
Those are quarterbacks, though, that are going to probably be on the market, is what we're saying.
Tyrod Taylor.
With Buffalo.
Another guy that's going to be a free agent.
Yeah.
It's a lot of guys.
And a lot of these teams that have quarterback questions may ultimately fill their starting jobs with these veterans, and then the draft is going to be more about, all right, maybe we'll start to speculate for the future as opposed to need right now.
And by the way, do the Chargers try to draft their heir apparent this year with Phillip Rivers getting
because they haven't been aggressive on
older.
That front. Yeah.
I mean, what do the Colts do? Do they have faith, Andrew? What if Andrew Luck has another setback with the shoulder between now and March? It's possible. You don't know. Could happen. If the Bengals get a new regime, are we for sure that whomever the new person that comes in wants Andy Dalton to be their quarterback? Do we know that for sure? How about the Browns? They're going to have all new people in there. You got to figure they're going to draft a quarterback number one. It sounds like the Dolphins want to go back to Tannehill. How about the Jets? Who's the Jets quarterback next year?
It's another one. Supposedly they would like to see if they could bring back Josh McCown, but he's not a long-term answer.
No, exactly. And then you mentioned Arizona already. That's another good one. The NFC South is actually the only division that has all their quarterback has all their quarterback positions kind of squared away. And if Cousins does leave the Redskins, then what the heck do the Redskins do for a quarterback? So this is going to – before we figure out what team's going to pick quarterbacks in the draft – so let's, like, chill on that. We got to figure out what happens in free agency first.
Yeah, we don't know how many voids there's going to be by the time the draft comes around, and that's going to change how aggressive teams are in terms of wanting to move up.
All right, Len in Maryland, he's our final call of the day. Hi, Len, how are you?
Frustrated.
I know, it was a tough loss, Len. I thought they might get their home victory there for you, their second of the year, but they couldn't pull it out.
2-12, 0-10 in the conference. 0-5 in the division. When was the last time we didn't win a game in a division? I don't know. You don't have to go look that up. I'm going to look
quite
that
some
up
time. Yeah.
Someday. I mean, that's just a. Yeah. I mean, those numbers are awful.
Yep.
Oh, look, you know, I get the feeling about this defense. We scored 9 points. We're going to give up 10.
We scored 29 points.
The other team's going to score
34. Len, I think you hit it on the head. It's you certainly have gotten that feeling over the course of the year, that they'll do just enough to lose.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
I didn't
please.
Mean to interrupt.
You're fine. Go. You're good.
Even Spags in the post game. No, I got to do something about this defense. I mean, I don't know what he can do. You know, I mean, we score 9, they're going to score 10. We score 29, they're going to score 34. I don't know. We got to take a look at this defense, too, in the offseason. Hey, look, I thought you guys were – a little hard on Eli in your introduction before the call started today.
Really?
Yeah, you know, you sound like Coach Ben and Coach Cignetti.
I said he played
obsessed with his footwork. Not that you were
obsessed with
Len, footwork,
Len, hold
I mean,
on,
you,
Len, hold
you're
on.
You're talking about overthrows.
Len, I
come
said,
on,
he,
guys.
Len, I said he played his best game of the year.
Well,
what else? What do you want me to
like
say?
Seemed like you were heavy on the overthrows.
No, well, we were bringing up the fact that there were a few balls that I'm sure Eli would like back, and
two.
I think you could
I
say
said
that
there were two.
But Len, you could say that about every quarterback in every game.
There you go. And,
correct.
And here's the other thing,
absolutely.
Len, you know, the problem we have as a society, and I'm not pinpointing you, is there's nothing wrong with saying, you know what, guy played well, but at the same time looking at it through another lens and saying there's always room for improvement. I mean, do you really think the coaching staff goes into the film room every week as polished and as veteran as Eli Manning is? Eli, every single throw was perfect. We got nothing to talk about. Let's move on to the next opponent. So, I mean, Len, you know,
okay.
I mean, is it a crime to say two throws?
On that, Lance, but let me ask you a question. Is that going on in New England today? Is it going on in Pittsburgh? Is it going on?
Oh, it's certainly going on in Pittsburgh. It certainly is.
Is it going on in L.A.?
Len, Ben Roethlisberger threw an interception into double coverage.
Like you could say that about any
quarterback. Len, I guarantee you. Len, hold on. Len.
This fan base.
Len, I promise you. Len, I promise you that there are Steeler fans out there killing Ben Roethlisberger for what happened at the end of that game today. I promise you, in Pittsburgh,
absolutely,
they have people out there saying he cost us that game by throwing that stupid slant over the middle. I promise you that's happening down in Pittsburgh today. 100% promise you.
Okay. Can I move to special
yes,
teams?
Yes, please.
Sure.
Go right ahead.
For a second. Let
absolutely
me go to special teams.
Sure.
I mean, that was awful yesterday. There's no way to defend it. I'm going to try to defend it a little bit. You know, you brought it up at the beginning of the show, John, and I think you're absolutely right. Darius Thompson was lost on that punt block. But you know what? Darius Thompson isn't the fullback on the punt team. Matt Burhe is, and Burhe didn't play yesterday.
Yeah,
you know, these injuries affect every unit on
they
the
do
team, including special teams.
You're absolutely right.
When you start moving people around,
yep.
Look, it was a bad play by Thompson, but, you know, he's a new guy at that position. We've been playing Burhe there all year. And on the block field, first of all, that I think we got a little out of coach. That Philly special teams coach, he's good. A guy named Phipp. That's
yep
not the first kicks they blocked this year.
Their
block
unit
like
has been
kicks
tremendous over the last few seasons.
Right?
They've been one of the best units in the NFL.
Teams.
Yeah.
And I think they saw weaknesses yesterday. Maybe it was based on, you know, who's playing the position based on injuries. I mean, Ellison, I don't know if Ellison has been playing on that wing all year on field goals and extra points. But, I mean, there were two guys right over him. He took the outside guy, and Jenkins, I mean, untouched to the inside. I don't even know who the tackle was on that play. But
yeah, neither do I.
I don't think that comes by luck, John. I think that special teams coach, they just saw that, and they picked on that yesterday. But, hey, look, make no mistake. You know, these guys are getting paid. They got to go out there, and they got to make plays. Darius Thompson, Red Ellison,
Darius.
You know, whatever. But sometimes the injuries take effect on all of those, you know, all of those units. Look, refreshing to see. Opened it up a little bit yesterday, right from the start. Fast-paced, moving the ball, as you know, as getting to the play as quickly as possible, moving the ball on every play. I thought that was a great offensive scheme. I mean, you know, he put up 430 yards, maybe even more than that.
Yeah,
close to 700 in 2 weeks. I mean, you know,
yeah.
And I hope we continue to open it up a little bit. Arizona's going to be tough. That's a very good defense.
Yes,
underrated
they are.
Defense.
And yeah. You know, by the way, a better – and Len, thanks for the call. It's 1 o'clock. We got to go. Appreciate
it. All right.
A much better defense than the Eagles, I think, in my opinion. They've done a real good job. Look what they did to the – you know, Kirk Cousins, who's had a monster year, I think they held him to under 200 yards passing in that game.
They did. Two touchdowns, but yeah, I mean, his numbers weren't overwhelming. I think Arizona's got a solid secondary. You got Patrick Peterson, one of the best corners. Chandler Jones is one of the best pass rushers. I mean, Philadelphia, the only thing I would argue, John, is I think Philadelphia's got a lot more depth on the defensive line.
They do, but if you look at the Eagles' numbers the last few weeks, you've seen their defense start to show some pockmarks here or there. They've been a little bit iffy the last
few
weeks.
They have. Well, especially more so the secondary. Mm-hmm. Than the front seven, because you know, a couple of the callers brought this up. I was impressed with the separation the Giants receivers were getting yesterday.
I agree.
Against, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, Philadelphia's turned into some backups. Eagles were fully healthy. Week three, they did not have Ronald Darby and they did not have Rodney McLeod, starting corner and starting safety. They had both of their starting corners and both of their starting safeties, and the Giants were moving the ball effectively over the course of the game better than they were in week three when Odell Beckham and company were on the field. So that, to me, is a bit of a red flag if you're the Philadelphia Eagles right now, especially when the competition is going to get a whole lot greater when you get to the postseason in terms of the receiving talent.
Absolutely. And, folks, our intention wasn't to kill Eli. He was the reason the Giants were in the game. He played his best game of the year. The Giants had their best offensive game of the year. All we made the point is that over the course of games, there are a couple throws you want back. Like, I guarantee you, when Eli goes in the film, he's going to be pounding his head on the desk because he threw the ball right to Nigel Bradham's chest. He's not going to be happy about that. He's not going to be happy with the fact that if, you know, he threw the ball 6 feet over Evan Ingram's head in the end zone, that he overthrew Shepard by, you know, 6 inches. But again, you had, like Lance said, those plays can happen for any quarterback in any game. It's just a matter of picking out certain plays during the game that I feel like the way the society's come here, Lance, this is going off what you said before. The minute you say one negative thing about somebody, you hate that person now. You can't be like, I think this guy's a good player. Oh, but that was a bad play.
At the same
time, yeah, it's once you point out it's a bad play. Oh, my God, you think this guy stinks. Like last week, I got a thing on Twitter from a guy after we talked about last week with Eli.
Well, I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, and it was like a 3-paragraph, each one of the full 240-character rants from somebody on Twitter that I should be fired because I was a shill for Eli. And being a shill for Eli, I was disrespecting the organization and showing more loyalty to Eli than to the Giants, so I should lose my job and I should be fired. Only because I said it wasn't Eli Manning's fault the Giants lost the game because there were 3 drop passes on key third downs. Now,
well, I hope he was watching today and heard what Len had to say. Well, because
I can't win.
Well, that's what I was going to bring up. It's a catch 22. On this program, if we sound too supportive of Eli Manning, then we're not looking at it from the opposite lens or vice versa. So, you know, my question to the fan base is, I get it. This was a very emotional season when it came to Eli Manning because of what he's meant to the organization and then the fact that Geno Smith started a game. But there is no crime. If we're going to have an honest conversation about every game and we're going to break down all of the nuances and the ins and outs, there is no crime in saying, hey, there were games where Odell Beckham had drop passes that he could have done better in terms
Correct.
Of execution. There are games where Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram had a couple of drops in a recent game, and we brought that up too. You can look at it with a critical lens without necessarily feeling that you hate everybody on the team.
What? Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram played great games yesterday. Guess what? Both guys still dropped the pass.
Exactly.
And there's nothing wrong with pointing that out. The same way we pointed out that Gallman's played well the last 2 games, but, well, let's not go nuts over 4 games at the end of the year. There's nothing wrong with both those things being accurate. everyone doesn't have to be great or stink. There's something in the middle.
Correct. Well, and that's why, I mean, this is just my own personal philosophy, and I think you stand close to it. I am not in the business of crowning individuals on this program or any other program, and I'm not in the business of hammering and killing every individual from game to game. There's a middle ground to most games, and when players don't execute, we've been the first ones to let you know that they did not execute in all facets as to why this team is not produced. But, I mean, you can't just say after they throw out 500 total yards of offense that everything is now rainbows and lollipops with respect to this offense. There's still ways for them to improve and get better. And I think that's exactly the point that we were bringing up earlier in this program.
Amazing. There's a middle ground, Lance.
Maybe hard for a lot of people to find, but the middle ground does exist. You just got to be able to accept the middle ground. That's the big thing.
There is nuance in this world and context. A lot of people like to throw out the nuance in the context.
Well, remember, we live in a world of hot takes.
But
so
we like to
there's
try
no
to,
room for middle ground in hot takes.
We like to try to give some of that here to the best of our ability. I'm sure we fail a lot of the time, but we try. Anyway, thank you for joining us today. It was fun. Thank you to Lance. Thank
Indeed.
You to the callers. Couldn't do it without you, as always. Tomorrow, we'll be back with you. It is Russ Salzberg and David Deal. Plenty more coming your way this week on Big Blue Kickoff Live and on Giants.com as the Giants get ready to play a Christmas Eve matchup in Arizona, or in Tempe, I should say, against the I'm not sure it's in Tempe anymore, actually. I think it's technically in a different city now, isn't it?
Well, it's the University of Phoenix Stadium, that I know.
I'm
technically not within the Phoenix area? I'm not an expert.
No,
see, we should have had Kevin earlier in the program. He could have broken it down.
I don't think it's
could have broken down the geography.
Now it's bothering
well,
me.
Let's look
it
up.
That
yeah,
up
I mean,
for me, please.
Nothing much brings us greater joy in extending this program so that we can
this.
Go over the ins and outs of Arizona.
Shut up.
Because John doesn't know geography 101 here.
I was in 2011.
Glendale, Arizona.
You.
Okay.
I should remember from 11
Mystery
when we played
over.
The game there.
Boy, I'm just glad I could sleep well tonight.
Do you know how many times I had to drive to Glendale in 2011 when we were there for a week for the Super Bowl?
Well, that's
Bowl?
True. Yeah,
that's why
right.
I was
yeah.
so annoyed at myself that I did not remember it was in Glendale.
Okay.
And I wanted to say Scottsdale, but I knew that wasn't true because it was a 45-minute
well,
to Scottsdale.
At least you know your cities in Arizona. Whether or not you know the right one remains to be seen. But when it's Glendale, Arizona. Yes.
They used to play in Tempe, Arizona, but not anymore.
Correct. Yes, the old stadium.
The Diamondback Stadium is in downtown Phoenix. That is correct.
Okay.
That's it.
Now, what about where the Phoenix Suns play? Would you like to go for the trifecta?
I believe they're what? Also downtown.
Now, do the Coyotes play at the same stadium as the Phoenix Suns? Do we need clarification on that as well? Stay tuned for Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Russ Salzberg and David Deal will solve that mystery and more. If that's not the best tease in the business, then I don't know what is.
Guys, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one. Oh, man.